unfathomable that this collection of talent winds up outside of an expanded playoff system after having the best record in baseball for the first 2.5 months of the season. Everything goes wrong over the last 3.5 months, and the Mets find themselves on the outside looking in.
You talked about the talent in the room and that giving you hope that it would turn around. Why ultimately do you think that talent couldn't get results?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question that we're going to have to answer here, you know, because the whole year I kept saying, you know, we got the talent, and here we are going home. You know, I take responsibility. I'm the manager. It starts with me, and, you know, I got to take a long look here, you know, how I need to get better, you know, and then that was a messaging to the whole team as well, like, this is unacceptable.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, September the 28th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, and come to the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com website. You can get our chat there free. Subscribe over at Substack. No feed chat in our chat room. You want to get premium content, less than a cup of coffee for a price, a month, the price of a cup of coffee a month, blah. A little bit off like the Mets were this weekend. And, of course, you can check us out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Well, coming to you here on this Sunday, September the 28th, and you know, I didn't think we'd be having this conversation. Even as recently as Friday after the Mets lost, I really felt that they would find a way to win the next couple of games. And as I was pretty confident the Brewers weren't going to get swept. And I don't want to hear any complaining. I've seen complaints over the last couple of days. You know, the Brewers and Cubs, I think, went combined 1-6 against the Reds. I'm surprised about that. I mean, ultimately, I laid out a couple of weeks ago what the Mets needed to do. The magic number was 85, which is a very low bar, a very reasonable bar. And if you had told me in spring training that, hey, as long as the Mets get 85 wins, they're golden, they're in the playoffs in some way, shape, or form, I would have said, all right, well, that's not hard. Even with some of the things that have gone on throughout the season that we'll get into. But I said 84, it should be okay. Anything less, they're opening themselves up to tiebreakers that didn't fall their way. And I saw some conversation about, oh, it's terrible. They should have game number 163, play the game in. At some point, if you're a wild card team and you can't get into the playoffs and expanded playoffs with 162 games, you really don't deserve to be in the postseason. I mean, let's call it like it is. The Mets benefited from the tiebreaker with Arizona last year, and this year it burnt them. You know, you live by the rules, you die by the rules. That's the way I look at it. I know that I've gotten so many emails from you guys and tweets, and I know that this is an ongoing conversation, and I know you're angry and frustrated and upset. And the first thing I'm going to say is, I don't know if it's productive for us to sit here like most mainstream media tomorrow and even later today if you watch, you know, Baseball Night in New York, SNY, all this stuff. You know, going to sit here and say, you know, what's 2025 versus 07 versus 08, the collapse of this, all this verbiage. I heard what Gary Cohen, you heard what Gary Cohen said at the end of the ball game. You know, Gary's kind of on thin ice with a lot of Mets fans for a variety of reasons. I think his overall announcing has declined. And I know he got himself into some hot water over the last couple of weeks that pissed off some Mets fans. I talked about that over on the premium content. And I love Gary to death. And like I said a couple of days ago, I thought, you know, Gary's wife did the Gary Keith Aron charity, she's been, you know, great to me. And, you know, I thought that him even getting involved in collapses and all this. It's just all these words, they don't mean anything. You want to sit here and spend 45 minutes to an hour talking about whether it's 2025 versus 07 versus 08? Hey, great. You know, last week of the season versus Miami, this time instead of at Citi Field or Shea Stadium, it's at, you know, their ballpark. It is kind of weird how three times now it's played out the same way, with game 160, 161, and 162, and game 161 playing out a similar way, and game 162 playing out a similar way. I mean, this was very similar to me to 2008 when I was at the last game at Shea. I was in the ballpark for that game. I remember when Beltran hit the home run, and I think it was the sixth inning, how the place exploded, and how, you know, frustrating it was sitting back and watching the Mets fritter away an opportunity to make the postseason a year after they had a really bad collapse. Now, you know, the thing about all this is that that could be something that we could sit here and talk about, but I don't think that that really tells the story. All that is us debating something for distraction or be mad. You want to be angry, you want to be mad, you want to yell and scream. That's fine. I mean, I'm not happy. And believe me, David Stearns is not happy. Carlos Mendoza, you heard him in the postgame, isn't happy. The players aren't happy. I mean, nobody wants it to be this way. This is just reality. But, you know, for me to hear throughout pretty much the last few weeks, fire Mendoza, fire Stearns, fire the hitting coach, trade this guy, I don't want to see that guy. First of all, like, that's just you being angry. And that's not how this thing works. You want to know why the Mets are in the position they're in right now, where although they've had a really good or one of the most respected president of baseball operations in the league, when he came in about 24 months ago now, about next week, around this time next week, it's going to be 24 months he's on the job. Okay, and I know Cohen's owned the team for 5 years, and I saw the, you know, they're going to start saying, well, Cohen took over. If I don't win a World Series in 5 years, that'd be a disappointment. You know, sure, it's a disappointment, but it was hard. Even when he said that, I thought that'd be hard. But this tweet by an account, Mets Analytics on X, tells you everything you need to know. I'm gonna read you the top, going into today's ball game, wins above replacement on the roster, and who the GM was, or president of baseball operation, since, you know, when these guys were acquired. Number one was Lindor at 6.1 WAR. Alderson was acquiring him, with probably Jared Porter started it before he got fired, and Zach Scott. 5.8 Soto, that's David Stearns. 3.6 Alonso, that's Alderson drafted him, and then obviously Stearns re-signed him. 3.1 David Peterson, Alderson regime drafted him. 3.0 Nimmo, Alderson, first draft pick ever, drafted him. 2.3, Beatty, drafted by Brody Van Wagenen, who everybody hates. 2.1, McNeil, drafted by Alderson, was re-signed to a pretty good contract by Billy Epler. 2.0, Diaz, traded by Brody Van Wagenen, a trade that you guys still cry about, Jared Kelnick, who's hitting .180 in the minor leagues, re-signed by Billy Epler. 1.9, Francisco Alvarez, Alderson drafted him. 1.9, Clay Holmes, better than you expected, huh? Stern signed him. 1.6, Torrens, Stern signed him. 1.5, McGill, Alderson drafted him. 1.4, Senga, Epler signed him. 1.2, McLean. McLean is in this list. He's been up a hot minute. Billy Epler drafted him. Developed by Stearns, though. Remember, McLean was drafted, but you have to develop these guys. So when you go up and down this list, you have a mishmash of what has been the situation since Cohen took over. Going all the way back to the fact that Alderson got sick, and then they had three-headed GM, and then they brought in Brody, and then the team was sold, and then they had the Jared Porter situation, and then Zach Scott had a DUI, and Alderson was in the mix of all this, and then Billy Epler came in because nobody wanted a job. And guess why nobody wanted a job, guys? Guess why? Because they knew if something like this happened, they knew that exactly what they've been reading and what they're hearing from the media, they knew that was going to happen to them, and they didn't want to deal with it. Now, Stearns grew up here, and as a Mets fan, he definitely knows what he's got himself into. By the way, if you do want to fire him, you're going to probably owe him, I think his contract's another $30 million. So, you know, think about that. Money doesn't grow on trees. And here's the question. Even if you want to fire him, and then fire Mendoza, who, all right, he's only making a little, I think he's making a little over $1 million a year, maybe not much. I think next year is his last year, then there's an option. So he's definitely going to get another year, and already Andy Martino reported as such. You want to fire Mendoza, fine. Money's not really a big issue. My question is, who's going to replace them? Now, I never wanted Buck Showalter to go. I thought it would have been great to have Stearns come in, but he wanted to bring in his own guy. He wanted to start fresh. Do I think Mendoza had a great year? Mendoza himself basically said in the postgame today he didn't have a great year, and he wants to learn from it. You know, part of being an executive, part of being a player, part of all this is to go in, put a process in place, put a philosophy in place, but guess what? Maybe they can learn and develop and grow from the mistakes. That's part of it. And right now, when Cohen hired Stearns, and when Stearns subsequently hired Mendoza, you committed to them for a five-year plan. Now, Mendoza probably gets one more year, and if they don't step up next year, I don't know about that option. I don't know if 2027 is in his future. But, I mean, could he have made a difference? Sure, Mendoza could have made a difference. But the way this roster, particularly the starting pitching, fell apart, it's really hard for me to evaluate how he manages a bullpen, how he manages their starting rotation. I don't get crazy about lineups. And let's even add, from a standpoint of the lineups, you had kids that showed you nothing at times during the year that they were big league players, and he had to either stick with them or mix and match them. So he was put in a tough spot this year. Did Stearns put him in that spot with the starting pitching? Sure. Did the kids with their performance put him in that spot? Sure. You think Mendoza wanted to send Alvarez down or have his catcher be sent down and have to deal with Hayden Singer, who's a great kid, great catch and throw guy, but a significant downgrade on the with the bat? You know, we had to keep Mauricio on the roster. Stearns had to keep Mauricio on the roster so they could keep that option where he basically buried the guy. And, you know, the guy's lost a year of development. I don't even know if he's really a big league ball player, to be honest with you. He's got a body of a big league ball player, but I don't know if he's a big league ball player. So, you know, when you start to really look at this, you know, you got to realize the situation that these guys are in. Stearns is here 24 months. They've made it to an NLCS. They've had a really bad second year. And by the way, a really bad second year with this group is 83 wins. Not 65 wins. Not a total collapse. Nowhere near. This season is better than Alderson's 11, Alderson's 12, Alderson's 13, Alderson's 14. Think about that. 11, 12, 13, 14. This season's better than Alderson's first four. And this is a horse bleep season by our standards. And I'm not saying it should be looked at that way. And I'm not trying to say that this is acceptable. I'm trying to put it in perspective for everybody. Think about why this team isn't a postseason team. And it has nothing to do with guts and clubhouse. And maybe the manager could have done a few things here or there to get him a game. I get that, you know, one way or the other. But the starting pitching over 25 games has an ERA over 7. Their walk rate is through the roof, one of the worst in the whole sport. They get starts consistently less than 5 innings. Today, they couldn't get out of the second inning. And in game 162, it is a synopsis of the problem. Manaea, who himself in the postgame said he was bad, I think he's going to probably need surgery for those bone chips. You know, they didn't trust him enough to worm out of a jam against a team that largely up and down the lineup has maybe 2 good hitters. Think about that. And a bunch of guys that stick their bats out in dink and dunk contact like it's the 85 Cardinals. Give them credit. Give them credit. Maybe they found the market inefficiency for teams with a restricted payroll. You want to get mad at Stearns? Well, there's 2 things he did this year, both of which he did last year. Maybe to a lesser extent with the kids part. The chemistry experiment bullpen that became a bigger problem when A.J. Minter had the lat issue and went down. And the inconsistency of the kids where he had Alvarez, Beatty, well, Vientos is really not a kid. And at one point, Mauricio, all of them. You know, really, Vientos killed them because he made more of a highlight on Beatty's struggles at that point. And then the starting rotation, which, you know, look, wasn't an issue on June 12th. I was in that ballpark when Peterson had the complete game. And once Senga had the hamstring, it went to hell in a handbag. And part of that might have been, I really think, and if you started to look at their FIP and their walk rate, and I was looking at these things through the first 3 months, and I remember, look, I give you guys credit that we're in, there's about five or six, a half dozen of you guys that used to email me almost every week saying, Mike, this team is a problem. I don't like the starting pitching. I don't like the way they're winning. They're relying too much on bullpen. Sure, when Soto was struggling, they weren't hitting enough. I mean, all those things. At the end of the day, they make the postseason if they get quality starts. I mean, and can you blame Mendoza today for going and yanking Manaea quick? Because how many games going back to August against Atlanta, San Diego, just this past Friday when they had the six-run, what was it, fifth inning Miami, where innings just didn't stop? I mean, think about those games at Citi Field against the Braves where they were clobbering them 5-6-0, and, you know, Peterson gave it away. Manaea against the Guardians, you know, just melted down after not giving up anything for five innings. I mean, they've seen this movie play out over and over, and he was trying to mix and match. Now, the one criticism I could give to Mendoza is a little bit of the love affair with Ryan Stanek, who throws 100, but nothing else. But I'll throw Stearns in there. You know, you don't like the way Mendoza's using him. Get him off the roster. You could designate him for assignment. But at this point in September, it wasn't like you owed him a ton of money anymore. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of things here that we're like looking to like debate about. But here's the thing. 25 and 24 are the same seasons. They really are. And they're similar teams. And you're like, oh my God, how can you say that, Mike? Last year, the vibes, First of all, the 24 team was in no man's land and was less than a month away from being torn apart when they were in London. Let's remember that. The 24 team had to go into September and play 600-plus baseball and barely snuck into the postseason, had to win 28 one-run games. And let's face it, their bullpen chemistry experiment was just as long, if not longer, because they got Maton and Stanek, and they didn't even go out and get an elite closer that they thought they were getting in Helsley and a really good setup guy in Tyler Rogers. And I know you guys don't love Soto, but he's really good against lefties. You know, he's a tricky guy in that bullpen to use because he's not a good against righties, so you have to figure out matchups with him in a three-batter league. And guess what happened? The starting pitching, which found itself in August and September last year when Quintana gave up, like, what, two runs in 40 innings and Manaea becoming Chris Sale and Tyler McGill actually giving them good starts down the stretch and David Peterson not being 2022 David Peterson, all those things helped them. It helped them get into the postseason by a Francisco Lindor home run on the last day of the season. So the criticism right now is Stearns has built similar teams the first 2 years. 1 year it worked out, and they got into the tournament, and they made noise. Thank you, Pete Alonso, home run in the ninth inning. And, you know, and think about that. Pete Alonso, home run in the ninth inning. Game one, bullpen implosion by the Phillies. Mets beat them in Philly, and then they step on their necks at home with good pitching. And then the Dodgers, let's face it, brought him back down to earth. And maybe we should have saw with the way the starting pitching was in the LA series, maybe we should have saw a harbinger of things to come. We just figured, that's the Dodgers. They were burnt out. No, well, the Mets starting pitching isn't good enough. Their bullpen isn't good enough. Now, I think there's some components of this bullpen. I think this bullpen was better than last year's bullpen, even with the struggles. And I'd like to bring back some of the guys, especially Tyler Rogers. So the thing now is this, is Stearns has done largely a component-driven, conservative financial model because, A, his first year he was saddled with some dead money, B, his second offseason, it was the pursuit of Soto, and, you know, everybody talks about, well, he should have done this, he should have done that, he should have done this. When you signed Soto, what, a couple of weeks before Christmas, to that big contract, that held up a lot of your financial flexibility. The Mets have, with the competitive balance tax, a $342 million payroll. I don't know how much higher they're going to go. So the idea that all of a sudden they could just go out and sign all these other guys now or next or going forward, it's going to require some movement. Now, I'm not going to get deep into that, but after the break, we'll at least lay out where my mind is at. I'd like to hear what Stearns has to say, and I think he's going to have either tomorrow or Tuesday. I don't know. I think tomorrow at Citi Field he's going to have some kind of conference. So the things I don't want to talk about is Stearns and Mendoza aren't going anywhere. Mendoza is going to get at least another year. Stearns is here for his contract. After year five, we'll see. So let's just stop with that conversation. Stop. You want to say you wish he did A, B, and C? Fine. You're not going to come to me and say, fire Stearns this. And the thing is, the reason you're in the position you're in is because of all the turnover that I just read off to you from that one tweet. Think of all the hands that have had their piece of the 2025 Mets pie. Brody Van Wagenen hasn't been around. He's an agent again in forever. His fingerprints are on this club. Sandy Alderson's fingerprints are on this club. Billy Epler's fingerprints are on this club. It's finally developing into Stearns' organization, but it's really not Stearns' club. And I'm not so sure that that's a bad thing. Look, you don't get... It wasn't like he was left a cupboard that was bare. He wasn't left the Colorado Rockies. But let's also remember that he's come in, and in 24 months, he's brought them to an NLCS. Nobody would have thought about that after what happened in 23. And yes, they underachieved this year. But, you know, from a business standpoint, they drew over 3 million people to the ballpark. Now you want to punish them and not have the same reorder rate, and now we're going to go back to a negative Citi Field and angry. That could happen. You know, all the good vibes. You know, the Mets, the biggest disappointment for me of all this is that the yoke I talked about, which I don't think returned. I really don't. I didn't sense that still thing. But a lot of the negativity that I thought we had seen and put in the past may come back. You know, I think the Mets open up against the Pirates next year at Citi Field. You know, Paul Skeens, if he's still in the club, is going to start that game. And if the Mets lose 2-0 because Paul Skeens shuts them down, you're going to boo these guys? Day one, we're going to go back to what the first five games of 24 looked like when the place was a mausoleum and everybody decided they were going to spend their summer evenings being angry and mad at the club because, well, that's how they like to spend their free time because they're mad at them for, you know, losing a few games in a row. You know, I don't really want to get into that. I know that's what some people want, and I think some people are going to criticize me for not taking a harder stance. This sucks. I think I could say that on a family show. This sucks. And if I want to say that what Stearns failed at, I think he has to evaluate a couple of things. He has to really take a long and hard look at the way that they rely on risky pitchers with stuff but need some coaching with the lab. Like what they did on Manaea on the positive side last year, and they did not do with Frankie Montas. I think he has to slow it down with the chemistry experiment bullpen. The DFAs are absurd. You could do some of that, but the amount of in and out and shuttling of that bullpen and the amount of fifth and sixth inning leverage relievers getting big outs or being asked to get big outs late is not good. Okay, those are the two things I would criticize him for. As far as hitters, I mean, largely, he's inherited the offense. He brought in some defensive guys like Bader last year, Tyrone Taylor, Siri didn't work out. I didn't really like the Siri move from when to start, but I also knew that they were trying to plug that center field situation because they would want to leave room for Soto. I mean, maybe you could be, you know, maybe some of what the Soto pursuit, I think, had its impact, in my opinion. You know, now it's year three. Now he's developed the farm system. One of the biggest positives of this season is Nolan McLain. And I know Sproat and Tong were nowhere near what McLain was, but they're interesting options. You're going to camp with three guys that are homegrown that are potentially going to compete for a rotation spot. By the early summer, you may have one to two more coming up down the pipeline. You got a Jack Winiger, who I believe was, you know, dominant in Double A in the playoffs. You know, Jonathan Santucci, Will Watson. You know, maybe, you know, on the offensive side, and I say maybe because they weren't great at Triple A, of Carson Benj and Jet Williams. You might have Ryan Clifford. You might have A.J. Ewing. You know, you might. They don't have as many positional prospects to make impact next year. Dylan Ross was brought up out of the bullpen. Didn't get a chance to pitch this weekend. He'll be in the mix. He's going to have to be added. You know, he's going to have to be kept on a 40-man roster because he was going to be Rule 5. So it's starting to become more Stearns' organization. And truthfully, if Stearns had taken over in December of 2020 when Cohen took over, and we're at year five and the record is what the record is, I think we'd have more of a conversation about his viability as the president of baseball operation. He also hasn't hired a GM. Maybe that's something he has to look at finally this offseason to help him out a little bit. I think that here's what I would say before we take a break. And this is not going to be a popular opinion. I don't care about collapse versus 07-08. The collapse pisses me off, but I'm not overly angry. And you want to know why? Because I know they have good people running the organization. I know they have resources, both at the minor league and in the coaching level, as well as the ability with the big league payroll. None of these things were present in 07-08. None of these things were present when Brody Van Wagenen was the GM. None of these things were present after the Mets lost in the World Series to Kansas City and then got shut out by Madison Bumgarner the year after. None of these things were present. So they had to kind of start over from scratch, and it was always in one-year increments. So you didn't know the next time you were going to have the opportunity. I think the Mets will be right back in the mix next year. Is it going to get harder? Sure. Miami's got pitching. They have not a lot of offense, but they got pitching. You saw that this weekend. Atlanta, you can never discount them. They have a good front office. They had some bad luck this year. I think the Phillies, this is their best shot. We'll see. But if Dombrowski's around and they have they have enough farm system, he's going to trade it to bring in veterans to try to go for it. You got San Diego, you got L.A., Arizona, Cincinnati made the postseason. Will they be able to, with Terry Francona, make the next step? Milwaukee, the Cubs. Like, it's a tough league. So this is a horrible situation. I haven't even brought up San Francisco. I mean, think about it. The Mets were in the muck team. There are teams like St. Louis, San Francisco, Cincinnati, the Mets. They could swing one way or the other with a few moves next year and get into the high 80s. I mean, this was a year where the level of making the playoffs was so low that they should have just been playing it out the last week. The big conversation tonight should have been, hey, the Mets really didn't have anybody push them for the playoffs, and now they got to gear up for a tough opponent in L.A., which if the Mets had made the tournament, it would have been hard to see them navigate with their starting pitching much past the wild card series. You had McClain, you had Holmes. And look, when this team had the blueprint, which was Holmes on Saturday and McClain on Thursday in Chicago, they showed you they were good as anybody. They had the dominant closer. They had enough middle relief. And that's without Helsley giving you much. They had enough offense. I think the Beatty loss was a big blow, too. I mean, the oblique. And you know what I knew it was over? I'll tell you what I knew was over. When Alonso lined out to left field, I knew that this wasn't happening. Because that was a synopsis of the offense all year. If you look at a lot of the metrics all year, the Mets probably hit the ball harder than anybody else, and one of the least lucky team in the league. And that just happens. I'm not going to sit here and cry over spilt milk. And I'm not going to sit here all winter and talk about collapses. And I'm not going to yell and scream about firing people. And I'm not going to do that, because now it's about getting it out, talking about what went wrong, and now what is the problem and what are the solutions. So we're going to take a quick break. And when I come back, I'm going to lay out some thoughts I have. They are not well thought out plans. That'll be for next weekend. But where they're at and some thoughts and things that we have to start to think about to take an 83-win ball club. A ball club now for 2 years has been a ball club that's a low to mid-80s team that has got to hope for things to come together late to get into the postseason. The 24 and the 25 teams are the same club. They really are. The ball bounced one way in 24. The ball bounced another way this year. Now they've got to get to the next notch. They did not have the breakthrough this year. They did not have the breakthrough, which is a consistent 95-win team. You want to win a division, you want to make sure you're in the postseason, you got to do what the Phillies did. You got to win 95 ball games. You got to win 92 to 95 ball games. You want to win a division, you got to win 95 ball games. You can't, hang around 87, 88, 89. It's not going to work, because 87 to 89 win teams are not that much different than 80 to 83 win teams. There's a lot of little variability there. And that's why the 24 Mets and the 25 Mets are the same club. And you thought that they put together a better club to inch forward. But in reality, they have not. And I think some of that has to do with what he was inherited. And I think some of that has to do with the timeline of the kids. And we'll see. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's start to build what are some of the things to look for this offseason, things the Mets need, players that will be here, players that will not. And we'll be back to talk about this and more right after this.
What are your thoughts about your future with this franchise?
I mean, playing for this organization, the city, I mean, it's really, for me, they've continued to believe in me. And I mean, I've loved playing here. There's some great guys in this clubhouse. There's some great people in the staff. And I mean, every single day, it's been a pleasure coming to work and putting on the orange and blue. So for me, I've really appreciated and been nothing but full of gratitude every single day. Nothing's guaranteed, but I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, I've loved being a Met, so. Hopefully they've appreciated me the same.
Do you expect to opt out of your contract, Pete?
Yes.
All right, we're back. You know, another thing that pet peeve of me is the term that people always, that's embarrassing. You know, like, it's kind of like certain words in our society are just thrown around liberally that they don't mean anything anymore. Embarrassing is like level, next level. Like, not showing up to play is embarrassing. You know, what Jose Siri did maybe last Friday with dropping the fly ball and then not hustling, that's embarrassing. You know what was embarrassing to me? Is Ronnie Mauricio having his, you know, playing around with his pan mitt at first base while the pitch was coming. You know what was embarrassing, what pissed me off this year? Was Alvarez's performance in Atlanta. But give Alvarez credit, with one hand, basically, or eight fingers, came back and... He was not part of the problem. Now, he still has some development. I still think his at-bat against Duran was a regression. That still bothered me. But, Alvarez showed a lot. So, as we get towards next year, now we can start really talking about next year. You know, I brought up Stearns and the things that I think he failed at. I think he's got to take the bullpen more seriously day one. You could add to it, but, like, have a decent foundation. Too much shuttling. I think that they have to absolutely, when they look at the pitching, figure out how they could get more certainty in the pitching staff. He stayed away from big contracts for maybe B minus pitchers because he figures, you know what, I could take a Manaea, I could take a Montas, I could take a Griffin Canning, and I could turn them for a lot less money into the same thing. He did that with Manaea. He did that with Griffin Canning. And guess what? Clay Holmes had, I talked about this on the premium content. Clay Holmes had a good season. Now, he's not looked at in the same vein because I think of all the struggles of the staff. And I think he struggled to go deep into games. And I think that the version we saw, who was a ground ball machine on Saturday, got deeper into the ball game with only a couple of strikeouts. That's a version he might want to look at being more like next year. I know nobody likes pitchers that don't strike anybody out, but you know what? If it gets you into the sixth or seventh inning, let's see what you can do. So I think that he's got to really look, and I know that one name out there in the free agent market is Framber Valdez. I'm sure they'll look to potentially trade for maybe a pitcher that's on a club that's rebuilding like Minnesota, like a Joe Ryan, you know, maybe Seattle. Let's see what happens this year in the postseason. They're one of the favorites to win the World Series. Does a George Kirby become available? Does he become expensive? You know, Sandy Alcantara, very reasonable contract. Maybe Miami trades him. I don't know. Maybe they'll say, hey, look, we got a lot of pitching. We got a lot of young pitching. We need some offense. Let's see what they could get for Alcantara. You know, we don't know what Miami is. Miami really ready to take the next step after the great second half? And what's that look like for a team like that? So there may be some options out there, but there's not a lot of big pitchers out there. Let's remember, you're kind of limited. So, you know, Stearns might have to look and say, hey, what kind of pitcher that's I'm going to overpay for in years? Like what they, you know, what the Dodgers did with Snell, what Arizona did with Burns. Guys that you got to look at how their injury plays out. And remember, he went for Yamamoto. He went for Sasaki. Now, Sasaki didn't have a good year. Yamamoto is emerging into a really solid pitcher. He tried. They didn't want to play here. And guess what? I have to tell you. I haven't even brought up Senga. If you listen to Senga in the postgame and this new I have to remake my body, that don't sound good. That don't sound like a guy that you could count on going in the spring. As a matter of fact, out of all the pitchers currently on the roster, I've had to rank them. Senga's number six. We'll fit you in. You know, he has to really, you know, the Mets have to really start to think about that's a sunk cost, that contract, the next 2 years. I'm not saying get rid of him or release him. I don't know if you could trade him. Be nice if you could. Maybe the Dodgers want him, let him hang out with Yamamoto. I don't know what it is. No trade clauses off the top of my head. But they have to really rethink that. They have, because if you're going to go into the season with the three kids, couple of kids that are in double A that may be options, maybe you resign Griffin Canning to a contract to rehab. You have Holmes, you have Manaea, you have Senga. You're kind of having the same problem, because if the kids take a regression, and that includes McClain, McClain hasn't been around the league two times yet, or get hurt, you're now back to a lot of maybes and openers and punting games. You don't want that. You're really going to have to get, you know, if not an ace, two really solid veteran pitchers that could stay healthy and give you innings. You really have to think about that. And I'm not saying don't rely on the kids, but, I mean, they had, what, 40, you know, Dylan Ross didn't pitch today, or else he would have been the 47th pitcher. But real quick, just to count this here, starts-wise, just games started, the Mets had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 different players make a start. There were three, like, you know, there's a bunch of openers in there, but at the very least, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There was about 11 different pitchers they had to use. Very hard to go 11 deep. And out of the pitchers who made starts or openers, McGill's not an option. He's going to be out with Tommy John. Reed Garrett's going to be out with Tommy John. So, you know, and that's where you could criticize Stearns, Blackburn, Griffin Canning, Tyler McGill. These were all shaky options. And from what I understand, Montas, the reason they signed him was because they liked the metrics, but he never really embraced the lab and what they were trying to do. Plus, he was hurt. Now, the other thing is you have the opt-outs, the two big opt-outs. Pete, who's opting out, he talked about it. Sounded like a guy that's pretty comfortable with leaving or challenging the Mets to really show him love. If they try to mess around with him, he ain't waiting until February this time. And Edwin Diaz, to me, he's going to start to say, okay, if I opt out, I'm playing with fire. Maybe I get more money. Maybe I go to a different place. If I were his agent, I'd approach the Mets and say, hey, can we get like a year tacked on? Like, I'm not going to get too deep into the numbers. I'll try to do that next week. I want to kind of stick with top line here. But Diaz, to me, I think it's 50-50 he opts out. I think Diaz is a guy who's really made a home here, and he's finally settled in. And I'm not so sure that he's going to get the contract that there's going to be the market for him that he thinks out there. You know, he's probably looking, if he opted out, for a Tanner Scott deal. And that's really not so much the next 2 years. That's him just trying to get a couple of years tacked on there. You know, get maybe another $40 million tacked on. I mean, they could probably figure that out. I don't know. That to me is risky. Now look, this might be his best chance to get that last big contract, because he's not getting any younger. But I think it's 50-50. Pete's going to opt out. And that's a complicated conversation, because when you start to look at the Mets, the pitching is complicated because you have kids that have upside and there's not many options as far as aces. And you may have to rip the farm system up to get the ace. That's possible. And one of the things, and then you have all these like second tier guys that you could sign to contracts, like I'll call them Montas types or Severino types. Severino worked out, Montas didn't. Montas, I should say, not Montas, Montas. Montas didn't. And, you know, they're a crapshoot. And then if you're stuck with dead money, you got another Verlander, you got another Scherzer on your hands. dead money that, let's face it, I don't know if they're going to have more than, you know, Marte's off the books, probably not bringing him back. Maybe you trade McNeil. That's another fifth. That's $35 million. Pete's $30 million off the books. You know, maybe you have like $65 million if you don't re-sign Pete to play with. And to get an ace, another bat, maybe, you know, another starter. I think the bullpen is actually in a better place, but you might want to bring back Tyler Rogers. I don't know what Helsley's market's going to be. I know that, you know, he wasn't impressive, but maybe you bring him back to rebuild himself here. I don't know if he could get a closer job. He's not going to get a long-term deal. They probably have to prove himself, similar to what Aroldis Chapman or Kenley Jansen does. I mean, you could probably play with that. That's not a lot of payroll to do a lot of the things you want. That and really, there's duplication on the roster. So you have Beatty and Vientos. I think you have to think about picking one or the other, especially if Pete Alonso comes back. You know, he might need to DH a little bit. Mauricio has an option. Maybe you have him go down and have a year at AAA and learn how to play a little bit, because he doesn't know how to play. He doesn't know how to hit a curveball. I think he's a decent defensive player. He might actually be a really good defensive player. Like, he made a couple plays at third this week and really good. Is he have value in the market? He has value because he's toolsy. I don't know if he's a core piece. At one point, he looks like Alfonso Soriano. The next point, he looks lost. You know, he looks like that kid, the outfielder the Mets brought in from Chicago in spring training that has all these tools but can't play. So they're going to have to figure out the duplication. I think Alvarez and Beatty are coming back and going to be part of the starting lineup. I think Vientos is likely to be traded. I don't think Vientos is ever going to give you what he gave you last year. And I partly think Vientos might be better off in another market with lower expectations. Vientos is a guy who's going to be a streak hitter, hit fastballs, hit bad pitching, won't hit good pitching, won't hit breaking pitches. I got him pegged. Now, he's good in a lineup, in the bottom of the lineup, but I would not clog up my lineup for him, and the Mets need more offense that's consistent. Will they fish in the top end of the offensive market? Kyle Tucker, Kyle Schwarber? I don't know. The problem with the Mets is the same problem this offseason that it was last offseason. There's only so many spaces you can make changes. You got Lindor at short. I know Andy Martino like floated out there in his article, because he already confirmed that Mendoza's coming back. He floated that maybe they'll think about putting out feelers for Lindor on the market. I don't even know if Lindor has a no-trade clause. I'll look at that while I'm talking to you. I know Brandon Nimmo has a no-trade clause. He has a limited no-trade protection. He could block deals to 15 clubs, but he may block all trades after the 2025 season as a 10-5. So he's a 10-5 guy now. Yeah, so he's not going anywhere. Brandon Nimmo has a no-trade clause. Maybe you look at opening some payroll with that, maybe replacing him. But, you know, realistically, Lindor's going to be here. Nimmo's going to be here. Soto's a corner piece. Alvarez, Beatty. So then the question is, do you open up second base by trading McNeil? What do you do at first base? What do you do at DH? What do you do at center field? Are you comfortable making Carson Benge and Jet Williams possible center field, second base opening day with big springs? And then you'd have to bring in veterans like, you're okay, if Benge doesn't do it in spring, Tyrone Taylor's your center fielder. Do you keep McNeil around in case Jet Williams falls on his face and make McNeil kind of like a backup, a jack of all trades? That's a very unsexy offensive offseason. And then maybe you spend some money on bringing in a DH or bringing Pete back, and then leaving first, you know, making the DH spot slash, let's see if Ryan Clifford can develop into something. Who wasn't? None of those three, Jet Williams, Benge, or Ryan Clifford, were great at AAA. Let's just put that out there. They had their moments, but they weren't great. That's a very unsexy offseason. Or if you spend the offseason improving the pitching, fortifying the bullpen with Diaz being, you know, the Michael Jordan of the bullpen, with better surrounding casts, are you happy? It's a very tricky offseason. It's actually going to be fascinating. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. But I think it scares you guys, and it scares me, because there's no guarantees in your year six of Cohen, and I know what you feel. You feel like, hey, there were two games away from the World Series. Now you feel further away than possible. But if you look at Milwaukee and you look at what Stearns did in Milwaukee, he would integrate veterans with kids. And Milwaukee never went into a season with a roster where people said, okay, that's a top four team, top five team. And the problem you have here is the media is not going to be kind to Stearns building the team like Milwaukee. Stearns is going to have to play for the big stars. Will Cohen be okay with passing on the big stars? There's a couple of ways this offseason could go. They could go, they could fortify the pitching, they could make some changes by trading a McNeil and you know, maybe bringing in some vets like they did the last couple of years, the Baders of the world, et cetera, and then really make a commitment to have a bench, Jet Williams, Ryan Clifford, maybe they bring back Pete, and Pete's, you know, another 4 years. It's really, I think, going to come down to, do you want to re-engage with Pete and what the clogging up of the DH hole becomes? Because I think if you bring back Pete, you got to trade Vientos, put Beatty at third. And or do you, you know, if you bring back Pete, then you're not really going to play with Schwarber and Tucker and guys like that. Maybe Bellinger, and I know the Yankees aren't just going to let him walk, but or Trent Grisham, a couple of Yankees right now that play center field. Bellinger could be a guy, he's going to cost you, but he could be a guy with his versatility, play center, and you can move him around that, you know, Pete, Bellinger, you trade Vientos, maybe Nimmo can play some DH. There's some play that maybe you go that route. Bellinger's somebody interesting, and wouldn't it be great to steal a Yankee player that they want 2 years in a row? Now, Bellinger's dad was a Yankee. I know he wasn't a big-time Yankee. He was a component Yankee, a backup 4A guy, so we'll see. But Boris does get along with Cohen, and it will be interesting at that point. What kids will they rely on? I mean, it's really interesting. They are going to maybe have to rely on some kids on the offensive side. So there's a lot of questions right now that we have out there. So here's the good news. The good news is we're going to have plenty of content this offseason. That's the good news. The bad news is going to be a lot of questions and a lot of debate, and I think that none of the answers that Stearns gives you this offseason will completely make you feel good, because this taste is going to sit in your mouth all winter. Every time baseball is talked about, this is going to come up. People are going to get on your case for being a Mets fan. I know, this sucks. This sucks. But again, I'm going to remind you, this is not a hopeless situation. They have more resources than ever. They have a better farm system. They do have some good players on this big league roster. And if you look at where they were under Sandy Alderson his first 2 years, this is a better spot. If you look where they were when Cohen took over year number two, this is a better spot. If you look at where they were post 07-08 situation with Omar Minaya, this is a better spot. It's not a. It doesn't excuse what happened. It doesn't, and I'm not saying you shouldn't be upset. But what I'm saying is, this is a better spot, and I wouldn't lie to you. I'd be the first to tell you, hey, this is hopeless. And the only thing that kept the post 2015 Mets, even in the conversation of relevancy, were those pitchers. If those pitchers weren't who they were in their prime, Harvey, DeGrom, Wheeler, Mats, Syndergaard, they would not have been even relevant. You know that, and I know that. That farm system wasn't great. Yes, Alderson hit on some draft picks. You just heard me talk about it at the beginning of this show, the Nimmos and whatnot. But he wasn't able to invest in the club. He didn't even bring in coaching staffs that were able to make anybody better. That's probably where some of the changes are going to be made. Probably the coaching staff. It sounds like that from Martino. I mean, they wasted prime pitching on Dan Worthen. Think about that. Think about if those guys in their prime had Jeremy Hefner, a guy like Jeremy Hefner, 10 years. The problem was Jeremy Hefner was still playing when those guys were on the team. So he was on the team at one point. So we'll take it from there. So what does the Talking Mets podcast, where does it go now? You know, we are now on, we're entering the 10th year, next year is the 10-year anniversary. Could you believe it? Opening day 2026, 10 years we've been doing the Talking Mets podcast. Not 10 years I've been doing radio, 10 years the Talking Mets podcast. Maybe I have somebody make a little logo for me. 10 years. So what's the winter going to bring? Well, we're going to have the weekly show, and that's always going to be available for everybody. I think we've made really great strides with the premium content. I appreciate everybody that is stuck with the premium content that they pluck their hard-earned dollars on. I think the audio during the week, the short audios, are something that we'll expand on. I think they do better during the season. During the off-season, I think the written word might be a little bit better at times, but I also think reactions to certain things or conversations might play. So we call it Beyond the Mic for a reason. You might get audio, you might get written, you might get video. I haven't done video in a long time. So I think that we've got a good flow there. So I appreciate those who have plucked down their hard-earned cash for the premium content. More to come. The chat room's free for everybody. I know you guys are constantly in there. You got certain people get a little saucy in there. We'll figure it out. You know, I just wish everybody would try to not turn it into the public bathroom. That's all I want at that point. Obviously, the Twitter spaces. I'm going to have a Twitter space tomorrow at 8 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. Follow me on X. Stearns is going to be talking at 3:30, so it's a perfect day to do the Twitter spaces. I usually stay on for an hour. Tomorrow, I might have to do a little bit more than that. Maybe we don't call it Mets therapy at this point. You know, maybe, you know, we call it, you know, post-mortem. Mets post-mortem, right? And what have you. So, you know, that's where we're at. But I want to say it's a disappointing end of the season, but I've had a ball with you guys. And one of the things that the last day of the season, whether it's a postseason loss like last year in LA or the last day of the regular season, there's always a certain amount of sadness. You know, I have to tell you, after the last out, I went outside in the backyard and I started doing busy work, you know, covering up the furniture and, you know, cleaning up and taking the garbage out and doing some things. And it was a beautiful day here on Long Island. I don't know where you guys are. I'm sure it was in New York City or wherever you are listening to this, because not everybody's in New York that listens to this. And it was like, I said to myself, well, this is kind of like the now summer for me. Now, fall started a week ago, but now it's officially now fall for me, because the baseball season's over. There's no postseason. The postseason's always fall, but there's no more baseball season. Basketball is less than a month away, about 3 or so weeks away. And the holidays, I mean, before you know, it'll be Thanksgiving. I mean, and think about it. It makes me a little sad, because we've been together all summer. We've been talking about it. The getting to know you phase, talking about the trade deadline, talking about getting it done, arguing, debating, assessing. And, you know, sometimes I know people get annoyed with me and, you know, I kind of like hold them accountable. I like to hold people accountable to words. See, my thing is I hold people accountable to words. When people say things like embarrassing, okay, like, I know you're mad, but like, that's an aggressive word. And then when they say like, fire this person, okay, like, let's think through it. You fire Stearns, this is what you owe him. Like, there's like, everybody says things in a vacuum emotionally. And I think sometimes we have to be more mature about it. And I really think that there's no way of looking at the glass half full here, and I'm not telling you to. But I think the fact that we have so much to talk about, that there's so much going on, there's so much hope, it makes me sad that we're not going to be talking about postseason baseball. But it does give me some solace knowing that we're going to be continuing to come here, continuing to have during the week check-ins, weekly shows, things like that. So I hope you stick with me. This thing continues to evolve. I'm having some conversations. Some people have reached out to me about, you know, networks and stuff. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm just trying to do my thing here and figure it out and see what works best. Right now, free show, premium content combination with a chat room and some Twitter spaces, I think, is a good little community. Maybe it's not the biggest Mets community out there. I know there are other shows, there are other options, there are other names. And all of them are great, and all of them bring something to you. And I just always appreciate every day. And I want to say this, they always say this the last day of the season, whether the playoffs or not, I always appreciate everything that you guys do. If you just spend even a minute listening to me, that's your time. You'll never get that back. The fact, if you subscribe for a year or just a month, I don't care. It's $5. That's $5 you could spend on, and we joke, a cup of coffee. That's your $5. There's so much you could do with that. You work hard for your money. I never want you to believe that I ever take that for granted. I don't. I appreciate it. I want you to know that. And I do try every week to bring you the best possible analysis of how I look at the game from my heart, That doesn't mean everything I say is true. That doesn't mean I'm on my game every week. There are some weeks, just like the team, I'm struggling here behind the mic. I'm tired. I'm frustrated. I'm angry. You know, I've had shows that I look back, maybe I was hard on. Like, you know, the Senga show, when I went off on Senga and yelled, which I've never done before, I've thought about that show a lot. I'm like, maybe I was hard on him. But then today I see what he said in the postgame about rebuilding his body. I'm like, maybe I wasn't. So, you know, I just want to say thank you for another season. It stinks that we're here and not going to be talking about the Dodgers and ramping up. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to sit back. We're going to take a deep breath. We're going to decompress. I just laid out for you some things that we have to think about. Next week on Sunday, we'll kick off our offseason. Even though the baseball postseason will be in full force, our offseason will start. And we'll start laying the foundation of what we would like to see. I'll tell you what I'd like to see. And then we'll start to listen to the Stearns of the GM meetings. And then we'll hear maybe more crystallization about what he's going to do. In between, you know, we'll make some conversation about Pete Alonso and Edwin Diaz. And we'll go through all the kids and, you know, the free agents stay and go. So stay tuned. Some of that will be on the premium content. So if you haven't signed up yet, go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Go over to the Substack link. Sign on up. Love to have you. If you can't afford it, I understand. Stay for free. Go in the chat room. We'll interact. Send me an email. I know I need to get better about reading emails on the air, responding. I'm going to get better. You know, just like Mendoza, just like Stearns have to look at this roster and look at their performance and be better, I have to be better. Listen, nobody's harder on themselves than me. Trust me on that. I really am. I take every comment and email to heart. Even if I don't respond to you, every tweet, I listen, I assess. I may not respond, I may not react right away, but I assess and I say, can I do this and does this work in the flow of what I'm trying to do here? So anyway, guys, that's it. I thought that was the best way we could put a cap on a terrible situation. Of course, remember tomorrow, 8 o'clock on X, Talking Mets Spaces, be there. Till then, you guys know, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, excuse me, no G, and at Mike Silver, I almost gave you the wrong one, at Talking Mets No G on X, and till tomorrow, till you see me on X, or till next week, take care, everybody.